Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody, and thanks for the invitation to come and speak here. Just to preface this talk with an outline of what is the ISI now. For many of you may be familiar with this term, if you're maybe a bit older, that what Dr. Garfield set up in the 60s was the Institute for Scientific Information and the Science Citation Index, and that company was later then brought into Thomson Reuters, and now the Web of Science group, as it were, is in a company called Clarivate. The ISI was re-established in 2017 to try and reinvigorate the kind of original thinking that existed in the organization back when Dr. Garfield set it up. So that is to become, if you like, the university within Clarivate, to bring into a team a range of people with academic and scholarly backgrounds, with both data and policy interests. And we have these three main functions within the organization. One is as a knowledge repository. So we do extensive analysis of our own data, make sure we understand what's in there, how to use it, how to improve it, and to work with the bibliometric and scientometric communities to enhance any offering or just to understand how it's being deployed. We also have a knowledge innovation function, if you like, to do research, try and understand new things that we can derive from our data, how we can link to other data sources, and this will become apparent in the rest of the presentation now that we're looking at other forms of impact and so forth. And finally, as a teaching unit in itself, to make sure that people in the community, people within our own organization, are up to date with the latest trends and knowledge. So today I've been asked to talk about the future of research evaluation. And as we've already heard, the agenda is shifting. There's been this long history of focusing on academic excellence through impact, through citations perhaps. And of course, excellence is important and we continue to measure that. But as a sole driving factor, it's not healthy. It can lead to concentration in specialization, and that might reduce the diversity of your research portfolio and in turn prevent you from maximizing on new opportunities and being agile. So you want to keep your research base diverse if possible. And the stakeholders' focus has shifted as well. So citizens and taxpayers want to know more about how their money is utilized and how the research that they fund impacts their lives and the lives of the people around them. And similarly so for big medical charities, they are now under even more scrutiny to make public the monies that are spent and the ways in which they are having an effect. So the trend is global, from just assessing research excellence and towards impact. With impact, there's a very complicated picture. And I think this sort of layer cake is a good way to illustrate that sort of array. So if you think about starting from the top, many different types of impact that you can conceive of: political, economic, social, legal, health, cultural, and they can all be drawn from different disciplines. Technological innovation can have cultural effect, and similarly so, work in arts and humanities can improve health of people. It's not so partitioned as you might think. The outcomes themselves are often changes in behavior and attitudes. That could be directly some kind of health benefits, but these could be more subtle in terms of the way people perhaps view others in communities, the way educational outcomes are assessed. And often there's a focus on improvements in the economy, and that may itself be direct measures of investment in job creation, but also in terms of working conditions and all kinds of diverse outcomes that the research could have. You can often think about quantifying the type of impact according to beneficiary groups. I listed a few here, students, patients, schools, communities. They're a very wide range. Sometimes they are broad, population level. Sometimes they are very narrow and focused. It could just be rural communities in southwest England or something like that. And they are all perfectly valid conceptualizations of how the impact is changing people. Then, of course, there's different forms of evidence that you might make use of in order to articulate what that impact is. Sometimes they are more tangible, so you might talk about patents, knowledge exchange, spin-out companies and things like that. You may even be able to draw an evidence from what we would call grey literature, the documents that are published by public health bodies and NGOs and things like the World Bank or the World Health Organization that might be drawing on original research. And in other cases, they will be much softer in the form of a testimonial or some kind of media or press coverage. And then at the bottom here, various different ways in which we might be able to measure that, and we are already starting to do that in different places in the world. Case studies is something we'll look at today briefly. Funders are now introducing these different aspects into the reporting models that they have. Institutions are thinking about collecting that, and the academics themselves. So many countries are now including impact assessment as part of a national research evaluation model. In the UK, the Research Excellence Framework did this first in 2014, and impact case studies will now be in the next REF in 2021. In fact, the weighting has slightly increased as well for that. In Australia, in the Excellence for Research in Australia, in 2008, a similar component was added, a model that's also been followed in New Zealand. The European Commission is a much sort of larger organization, but the programs themselves are very oriented around these kind of large thematic ideas, and there are requirements for thinking about and reporting on the impact in those too. And there are many other countries. China, we've been visiting this year a few times, are looking at the existing models to think about how they can deploy this. In South Korea, they've already built up huge databases of case studies about how the impact of their research is being deployed. So people are looking for solutions, both at the national level and in institutional level in many different countries. This is a slide just to illustrate the kind of history of the research evaluation, at least from a UK perspective. And there have been many different forms of research assessment exercise, the RAE and the Research Excellence Framework that it became. But the thing to think about is here was in the 90s, bibliometrics was just really starting to become an idea that people could measure the outcome of science using these numbers. And in fact, a colleague now, David Pendlebury, in the ISI, was working in the 90s with the NSF to deploy these ideas for the first time, and in the UK too, how they could be utilised. And then in around sort of 2000, there was this sort of natural shift towards thinking about, well, can we actually replace evaluation just using these numbers? And that idea didn't last very long, obviously. The peer review component is still crucial. You get a very narrow view of the of the research impact through just looking at bibliometrics and citations and even the research articles themselves. And then leading up to REF 2014, there was this combined approach, which was to still keep the traditional assessment of research excellence, but then combine that by looking more broadly at research impact through the use of case studies. So in 2014, in universities in the UK, they had to submit these case studies at a broadly, let's say, departmental level, and they could be submitting multiple case studies, if depending on the size. And they were forced to follow a template, but it was essentially free text, and they had these main sections. They had to summarize what the impact was. They had to talk about the underpinning research that led to that impact. They might include references to that research. Those references might include grants that were awarded and possibly patents that came out and so forth. And then the details of the impact section was really the interesting part, where they had to describe what the impact of the research was. And evidence was used in the final section, sources to corroborate the impact. Broadly speaking, most people followed the format, although when you give academics a template, they always try and break it. And I did some work with REF and King's College to put this information into a database to make this accessible. And this was always the intention from what was then HEFCE, the organisation responsible for making the assessment. So this information could be broadly made available to academics themselves, so they could go and search it and find out how are other people talking about the impact of their research. If you want to find out more about sort of the outcomes of that whole process and what we learned from that, there's an excellent report that was done by King's College London, The Nature Scale and Beneficiaries of Research Impact. And we worked together with King's on this report. And at the beginning, there was these very ambitious goals that were set. We want, you know, this is from the government, from our Department of Business and so forth. You know, we want to know what was the total investment in the economy as a result of the impact of this research, or what was the quality adjusted life years added from this research and things. And that was impossible to do, because the types of impact that were reported were incredibly diverse and mixed. And the ways in which people were able to report on them were quite inconsistent, even within the same domain. And what it comes down to a lot of the time is, what is the reasonable expectation of what could be achieved by that type of research? So development of a new drug that could have global impact on a disease clearly could potentially save millions of lives. But if your research is focused on a local community and perhaps in an educational capacity, it would be impossible to have that scale of impact. But nonetheless, that means that the work that's been done is valuable. And in talking with the peer review panels that assess this research, that was very much in their mind in terms of judging the quality, is what was the context, what was the reasonable expectation of a good outcome there. In terms of what data is collected in this process, with case studies, it's very messy. You've just got a load of text. And the best could be done in this situation was to make use of things like machine learning, to look at the text, to do things like topic modeling. And there are many examples in that report that are very interesting. This one is a core diagram showing, I'm sorry, it's very small here, various types of impact groups and how they were connected. We were able to mine the locations of where people were reporting these types of impact. And just from the UK, these are the places where people were reporting having impact by just doing some simple geocoding. So the impact of the research is global. And you can see here, there's a focus in the UK and in the US and Australia, as you might expect. But pick a country and you will find that someone talked about research impact there. You can also look at these texts to find out what were the sort of various beneficiary groups here from the top down, in terms of the most popular were companies, students, children, patients, schools, and those little bars there are telling you broadly which units of assessment, health, physical sciences, social sciences, and then humanities, where those beneficiaries were most mentioned. And you can start to break them down and understand where different departments were having impact. And there's lots of different evidence used. The most that was used was testimonial. People had to write. You can go and talk to these clinical practitioners about how we affected the use of a particular technique, or the CEO of Rolls-Royce because they've made use of this technology. It's going to be incredibly challenging to think about metrics that you can derive from these sorts of things. You know, the narrative is crucial, and the peer review aspect. So just to wrap it up, and if someone put a gun to my head and said, what would your predictions be? There's certainly going to be more and more focus on impact in these national assessment programs and by funders. Peer review will remain a crucial component and supplemented by bibliometrics. I think we will see more structured capture of engagement types as we look more into and gather more evidence through things like these case studies. We can understand better how we can track them through social media, through grey literature and so forth. We will hopefully see more development in terms of ontologies to help conceptualise what the impact is, both in terms of measuring and quantifying it, but also in terms of helping people understand what is the impact of their research. And we'll see researchers becoming more aware themselves of this need to think about the impact beyond the scholarly group, beyond the academic communities. So I'll wrap up there. Just to say, if you want to find out more from the ISI, we have a series of reports. Go to that website. Thanks for your attention.